traditional massage therapy to Champaign-Urbana since 1982.
This is Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Producing the show, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, Jason Croft is at the controls. This is hour two of the program, and in this hour, we are pleased to have with us Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County, and she is on the program once a month to talk about lawn and garden care and help out with problems in the home landscape. She is usually here on a Tuesday. In fact, next Tuesday would have been her time to be here, and we've been making a number of changes in our schedule to try to accommodate the hearings for Judge Roberts to be the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. Those will be taking place next week now, and we're expecting a lot of our regular programming will be preempted. So we tried to move some things around and called Sandy and said, well, could you come this week? And she said, sure, because that's the kind of gal she is. And so we're pleased to have her here. And this is the usual sort of thing that we do when Sandy is on the program. Maybe you've had some problem this year and you're still not quite sure how to deal with it. We can talk about that. Or maybe you're starting to think about what you're going to do next year, planting something different, making some changes, moving things around. And of course, at this time of year, there are, and as we get further into the end of summer, beginning of fall, there will be issues about cleaning up the landscape and getting everything ready to go into the dormancy period of the winter. So any and all of those kinds of things. Plus, occasionally people call and ask questions about houseplants. We can do that too. Any and all of that is certainly fine, and I know Sandy will do her best to give you an answer. 333-9455 is the Champaign-Urbana number. We do also have toll-free line. That's good anywhere you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. Well, thanks very much for being
here. Yes, good morning.
One of the things we talked about last time you were here was how to think about fall lawn fertilization, mm-hmm. weed control, mm-hmm. because we are now coming to the time where people can and do either one of those two things or both of those things. Mm-hmm. And I think that when we talked last time, you said, well, if it continues to be really dry, as it has been, maybe you want to wait, and that it is possible to wait as much as maybe another month, mm-hmm. maybe into the mm-hmm. At least into the right the very beginning of October. And it seemed to me your advice was, well, hold off a little bit and kind of see what happens. And it sounds like you'd say, we'll stick with that.
Yeah, you really don't want to fertilize really anything for the most part, unless there's enough water there to really make it useful for the plant. There has to be some water so it can take it in. And so, more bang for your buck for the plant as well as, you know, for the environment, you'd really want to wait until we get more rain, hopefully, or if you're going to water. So normally the 1st of September or so is one of our best times to fertilize a lawn. And usually we say if you're only going to fertilize once, 1st of September or so is your best time to do that. But right now, with everything being so dry, unless you're going to go ahead and water, I would probably hold off on doing any of that fertilization. You can certainly still fertilize later on in the year. And actually, our last fertilization is clear into November.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Usually the week or so after your last mowing. So usually we're talking November. Depending on what happens this year, we never know. So you still could do that. And certainly weed control, we always think about weed control in the springtime. But this actually is an excellent time to think about things like dandelions. But again, you know, in order for the herbicide to work very well, we do need a certain amount of moisture there. The plants have to be growing. So that might be another time where you may want to think about more into October, hopefully when we get a little bit more moisture. But it seems like the weeds don't seem to mind the drought.
They seem to be doing fine.
Nearly as much.
I look at the Creeping Charlie and it looks
it's
just
doing
happy.
Very
it's
well.
Doing very, very well. Thank you very much.
Maybe we need to change our priorities here on what we're growing.
Yeah. We have several callers here. Oh, we'll not get into that. We have several callers here, and we'd be very happy to take your questions. 333-9455 for Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. To start, we have someone calling from the campus, line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm. Good morning.
First of all, I think Creeping Charlie makes a wonderful ground cover.
Hey, and it's got flowers.
It's
it smells
green,
good.
And it has a little
when
purple flowers.
It sure. smells like summer.
Yeah.
Okay, but what I really care about is how do I improve my clay soil without digging up my plants and starting over?
Oh, so are you talking about in a flower bed?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if it, I will tell you,
if
it
plants and start over.
Yeah, well, if it's really bad in the long run, that's going to be a better fix for you. But what you can do is over time, and maybe you've already started to do this, is even, you know, whenever you get a chance to plant, certainly add compost at that time, mulching over the top, and then of course as the wood chips and stuff decompose, that's going to help to some extent. But if it's really bad, as in it just doesn't seem to drain, and you have a lot of problems, you might be better off just to actually dig the plants up. And what I have done, and I've seen other people do, is that you dig them up, set them off to the side in the shade, do your amendments and stuff, and then plop them back. So you don't, it's not that you necessarily have to do this so you pot them and all that kind of stuff. You can really just kind of take them away for a little while, make up the bed, put them back.
Bring them back. Okay.
That'd be your best bet in the long run.
Bring them back.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I was hoping for an easy out, but I guess
I know.
Not. All right. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thanks for the call. Bye. Let's go to another caller here. This is someone on line number two. The caller's in Champaign. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Hi. I've been trying to establish a lawn for last fall and this spring, and without the rain, some places the lawn has developed in clumps and tufts, and mm-hmm. there are places where there's less than 50% coverage, mm-hmm. and that's been like subject to wind and water erosion, a little water erosion this summer. And I'm wondering, what should I do about that? Should I overseed it? Should I plow the whole thing under, start all over again?
Mm-hmm. So you're saying you have about 50% cover?
Yeah,
so there's some good grass in there.
Pardon?
There's some good grass in there that you're like.
There are big tufts and clumps all over the place.
Okay. Is that Kentucky bluegrass, or maybe you don't know this, but is that actually
fescue and rye?
Okay. I would think about how much, and depending on what grass you want. Normally, most of our grasses in full sun are Kentucky bluegrass and ryegrass, perennial ryegrass mix. Tall fescue, you can certainly get turf-type tall fescues, but usually we don't mix those in with Kentucky bluegrass and rye simply because they look so different. So sometimes it doesn't make quite the quality of lawn. So I guess you have to decide, what is the cover of actual good grass that I like? If you're looking at maybe 20% of actually the good stuff, you may decide you want to start all over again, kill off the fescue, get rid of that stuff, and then reseed, and normally this is a good time to go ahead and reseed. You could go ahead, if you decide, you know, it really is probably 50% halfway decent grass, I'd be thinking about doing some overseeding, and I'd probably be thinking about maybe renting something that's called a slit seeder, and it actually makes slits in the soil and then drops the seed in, so you get really good seed-to-soil contact, and you'll have a much better germination, hopefully, through that.
Does that make the grass have rows?
You know, it, sort of in the beginning, but, you know, Kentucky bluegrass and perennial ryegrass, they send out stolons and rhizomes. You know, they spread. So it doesn't take very long for those things to spread, and it doesn't look like they're in rows.
And can those be rented locally?
Yes, as far as I know. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. And next caller will be in St. Joe and line three. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Mm-hmm.
I have two problems. Well, more than that, but I'll just address two. I garden, and I've got clay and all that good stuff. But I've had honeysuckle growing over in Auburn early in the season. It just is beautiful. Yeah, I was looking to see if I could find the variety it is. It's got more of the pink and yellow mm-hmm. flower. It's mm-hmm. not just the common old orange.
Right.
But anyway, it's just beautiful early, but I get mildew. And mm-hmm. no matter what I do and mm-hmm. spray and wash it off and all that, I still get mildew. So I've decided I'm going to dig it up and hope I don't kill myself doing that. But anyway, what would you recommend as a good something that's not going to have a problem like that.
Mm-hmm. And actually, I've looked around, and I have the exact same honeysuckle that you're probably talking about right now, because mine gets powdery mildew every year, and I've done everything like you're mm-hmm. talking about trying to get. I've cut it
it's
back. I've done
been resistant,
and it just
sure
looks
isn't.
Terrible. One, you know, if you still want honeysuckle, I'm convinced that there's must be a few of them out there, because I don't hear this from everybody that has honeysuckle. So I'm convinced there must be a few out there that are showing better resistance. resistant. So this might be an excellent time to go to garden centers and look at the honeysuckle that's out there. You're going to find out if they're going to get powdery mildew, they're going to get it at the garden center because there's such poor air circulation normally because you have lots of plants in one area. Mm-hmm. That would be an excellent time to pick them out and say, this looks like one, if you truly want to go that route, which is kind of the way I'm leaning. Because I like the honeysuckle for the, you know, hummingbirds. And,
right.
You know, and this is the type of honeysuckle that doesn't reseed itself. This is not Japanese honeysuckle, or people are concerned about that. So, you know, you might think about that. You might also think about, you know, do you like that the fall blooming clematis, the starting to bloom?
Yeah, that white one.
It's, you know, it's certainly very vigorous, and it'll certainly cover an area very quickly.
Right.
If you want to go that route. There's some other plants. I'm trying to think of some other vines. Actually, the climbing hydrangea is a very nice vine. If you can get it some moisture, it's not quite as tough as we might think with honeysuckles, but it is. So it will need some moisture from time to time, but it's a beautiful vine. Just has wonderful bark, but it's the climbing hydrangea.
How long does it bloom then?
It blooms fairly, you know, later on into the summer, and the seed heads are like all the other ones in that you get a nice show of the flowers probably for 3 weeks, 3 to 4 weeks, and then the old seed head itself actually remains attractive for a couple weeks after that. So you get a pretty nice, I think, bloom period from it. And it has excellent bark, so it has really pretty kind of winter interest to it, too.
Okay.
It's a little slower growing than honeysuckle, so it's not going to be quite as fast, but you may find that you like that one as well. I'm trying to think. There's certainly some climbing roses. I don't know whether you want to go that route or not.
I've got some of that at a different area, but anyway. Okay, well, I might look into that. My daughter has an akiba. Now, will that... I looked at her tag, and it says it'll grow 4 to 6 feet. Well, hers is... up to the roof.
I was going to say, who said it was 4 to 6 feet? I think they left off a zero. I think it's more like 40 to 60 feet.
In just one season.
Oh, yeah. I can't believe they said 4 to 6 feet.
Hers is just one stem. Now, if you did trim that, would it branch out then, like to cover an arbor?
Yeah, usually, I don't know how long she's had that, but usually they actually start doing a little suckering up, is what I've seen. They're very pretty. They don't seem to have a whole lot of insect and disease problems. It's a very vigorous vine. And it doesn't really have flowers that are all that terribly showy. So if you're really looking for flowers, I'm not sure you'd like that one.
I see, yeah.
Yeah, it has a really pretty leaf.
Yeah, okay.
Kind of Schefflera-looking leaf. But
my other question is, and I don't know what, there again, I've forgotten the variety, but it's the small spirea that you would plant around your foundation of your house. And it blooms a couple of times a year. I keep trimming it back. But it's just got leaves at the end of the stalks, and the centers are all, you know, like dead, just wood. Can I trim that way back, and will it sprout out?
Is this the pink one?
Pink.
Yeah, you certainly can trim those back. I would wait until next year.
Right.
Probably, you know, March or so, April, I'd think about cutting back. And you can cut those back really quite severely, and they'll look so much better. And it probably is a shrub that does better if it's actually, you know, pruned back in a major way every 5 years or so.
Okay.
They actually will look much better.
Yeah, okay. I was always kind of afraid to trim back.
Go for it.
Beyond where there's leaves. And so
the first time you do it, it's so scary.
Yeah.
But then you see how pretty it looks afterwards, and then you're convinced that...
Okay, that's just fine. Thank you so much, Sandy.
Okay, thanks for the call. We're getting some other people lined up here. Our guest this morning in this hour, Sandy Mason. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And she is with us on the program once a month, usually on a Tuesday. We just did a little change around because we're going to be preempted next week. And we thought, well, we didn't want to go an entire month without having Sandy here. And she was nice enough to rearrange her schedule because we were rearranging ours. So same deal as always. You have questions on things that grow in the home landscape, trees, shrubs, flowers, the grass, ornamental stuff, stuff you can eat, houseplants, any and all of that. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Somebody in Urbana is next, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
We have a hibiscus plant that is in a pot. It's about 3 feet tall. We kept it inside last winter, and it did fine, even grew a bit, and even bloomed a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've put it outside in its pot, and it's done beautifully this summer. Now we want to take it back for this winter, and we're wondering what we should do. Should we cut it back, or could we cut it back so it's smaller? It's getting rather large to keep mm-hmm. in the house.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Does it have? It must have fairly good light when you bring it in.
Yeah.
Do you have it in a fairly lit?
Yes, it's in a bay window, and it does. You know,
oh, so light. Probably fairly happy.
Outside,
right? So you certainly could trim it back. I'd probably trim it back where you're still seeing some green leaves.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm not sure I'd really get in green stems. I wouldn't go way into the brown part, even though you could do that maybe next year if you wanted to do that. But, you know, we're getting into that time period where they're not going to have as much light, so we don't want to do severe pruning at this point because we want to make sure that they recover properly. So
right.
I think I'd do some trimming. And,
about in half?
Depending on where, you know, without seeing it, it's kind of hard to tell. But
yeah.
as long as you go back where it's still kind of fairly green, maybe there's still leaves coming out, I wouldn't worry about it as long as there's still leaves coming out, you know, where you trim.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't think you have a problem. And then make sure it gets, obviously, the light. And
yeah. Good.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Okay, very good. Next to someone here on the campus of the university, line number two. Hello.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I've got tree sprout suckers coming up in my backyard from about a 2-inch root running through my backyard. And the leaves look like no trees within my visible neighborhood. Wondering what the source of that could be and how I can keep those from coming up in my backyard.
Mm-hmm. So they just sprouted, these kind of little trees sprouted up.
Yes.
And what do the leaves look like?
Oh, maybe like an ash. Very, very, very small leaves opposite.
Mm-hmm. Well, could be an ash. Sometimes I've seen ash reseed themselves.
Uh-huh.
And so it could very well be an ash.
Yeah.
And is this in a lawn area, or did you say is it a mulched area?
Lawn area.
Huh. Hmm. Yeah, normally you would think it'd be from a tree that's nearby.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess it's, you know, obviously a couple things that you could do is just mowing it off. Eventually it'll get to the point where it won't come up quite so regularly for you. But you're probably going to have to do something a little bit more dramatic depending on how big it is. So if it's got some size to it, as in like pencil size or so, is it getting that big?
No. They're still smaller than that.
Oh, okay. If they're fairly small, you actually may be able to just to pull them out.
Well, but they're attached to a 2-inch diameter root.
Hmm.
Inch and a half, maybe.
But yet, there's no tree that looks like that around there.
Right. Now, there's a tree of heaven, I believe.
Oh, then I bet that's
a ways behind us, but it's yeah.
Well, tree of heaven kind of has a leaf like a
ash.
Yeah. Hmm. That's going to be a little bit harder for you. Probably one thing you could do is if you can, obviously, you must have dug down to see where this comes off.
Right.
Or where it attaches. One of the things you can do is that if you can take it and then just pull it off rather than cutting it off.
Ah, okay.
And then supposedly that takes enough of that little stem area where it's coming up that
right.
it doesn't resprout as regularly.
Okay.
So that'd be the first thing I'd try.
I'll try that.
Mm-hmm.
Could I end up just digging the root out, chopping it out at both ends of the yard if I can?
Yeah,
trace it?
If it's not that big of a root, the 2-inch, I would say it's probably not going to hurt any tree. Now, obviously, the one thing that could happen is wherever you cut it, it could resprout. I mean, that's always a possibility, but
right.
I wouldn't think it would do that.
Okay.
So that would be your other choice.
All right. Thanks. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
good
thanks.
Luck.
Yep.
For some of those trees that are really notorious, like, for example, we had a neighbor had a locust, a mm-hmm. pretty good-sized tree that was cut down several years ago, and it's still sending up shoots just all over the place, including in our yard, which was probably a good 10, 15 feet from where the tree was.
Isn't that amazing?
And I just go in there, and when I see him, I just cut him off. And I know that eventually the root gets tired and stops, and it'll just stop. But I'm not sure that in a lot of cases, just continue, anytime you see him, just cut him, and that it may take some time, but eventually it'll stop.
Yeah. I mean, if it's off a tree, like in this case, where it's not attached to anything you want to keep, you could actually use an herbicide on it.
Once you cut it, do a cut surface
treatment. And you certainly could do that. You have to be obviously very careful not to kill off part of your grass there as well. But that would be something more long term. But you cannot do that with suckers on trees that you want to keep. So it's not something not a process you can use on crab apples and some of them that actually send up suckers on a regular basis.
Yeah. So you just have to, keep.
Yeah. I'm actually starting, and I have no profit in this particular business, nothing to do with it. But I am trying a product this year called Sucker Stopper. And so far, I've had pretty good luck with it. It's expensive stuff. And there's a certain amount of, you know, you have to be careful. It's like any kind of pesticide. You have to be careful when you spray it, all that kind of stuff. But it seems to be, I had crab apples that are suckering like crazy. Mm-hmm. So far, it seems to be working well. Maybe I can tell you more next year whether they truly start to sucker up again. But if that product works, I think it would be worth the expense not to have to deal with them every year.
Well, lines are full here. We'll just keep on. Talk next with someone in Piatt County, line 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have a question about, is it cleomase or cleomes, the spider plant?
Mm-hmm.
I had several that came up volunteer.
Sure.
And they're so beautiful. Yes, and now they're so tall and looking a little scraggly.
Mm-hmm.
Can you cut those off and they'll branch out?
Not really.
Okay.
but you can save the seed, you know, if you want to have it for next year, or just let them reseed themselves.
Where would the seed be? Is that the little... It's within the flower itself.
Well, if you look down farther in on the plant,
mm-hmm.
where the older flowers were, they would see these long, you know, I don't know how to describe them, kind of little pod-looking thing.
Like whiskers or something.
Yeah, well, they look like a little pod.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, open those up, and there should be little black seeds in there.
Okay.
So I would just keep those. And that's just, unfortunately, spider plants just do that. The cleome just does that as it ages. It kind of gets kind of tall and kind
of
and
lanky. Yeah.
Yeah, if you can, you obviously can let it reseed itself, but if you could sort of time your seedings so they're not coming up all at the same time, then you could actually remove the old ones as the newer ones are coming up. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
So in the spring, if you can sort of time it yourself, and they're real easy from seed, so you can actually do that if you want to.
Okay, and then the second question is the fall mums.
Mm-hmm.
It's so dry. I planted a couple, but it's just really so dry.
Mm-hmm.
Can you still get the same effect if you don't really want them to come back and leave them in there with the pots that you bought them in? Will they still flower as well?
Certainly will. And it's one of those things that probably the one thing you may notice is that you're going to have to still water a lot.
Yeah.
It's not going to change how much you're going to water.
Mm-hmm,
you're still going to have to water.
Yeah, but I was just going to stick them in a basket and...
Oh, sure. And a lot of people like to use them as, you know, more like a winter annual
mm-hmm.
than we really think of as it. And a lot of them don't come back the next year anyway.
I have noticed that.
So they kind of act that way anyway on their own.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you. Next caller is Bloomington, Illinois, line 3. Hello.
Hi. Good morning.
Mm-hmm. Hi.
I'm hoping that you can settle a vigorous debate between my father and my brother.
Uh-oh.
They recently... regraded and reseeded my lawn, and my father insists that we should cover the ungerminated seed with straw or some other material to help retain the moisture when
mm-hmm.
it ever rains and,
mm-hmm.
and protect it from erosion. And my brother feels like that's unnecessary and contributes to regrowth, and it's just a point of contention, and we're wondering what we should do.
I don't know if I want to get in the middle of this at all.
They've agreed to abide by your decision.
Oh, man, the
Ooh.
Pressure's
Ooh, there's
on.
There's a lot riding on this now.
Man, this talk about Supreme Court.
This is like car talk with plants.
It is.
Well, okay. The problem is they're both kind of right.
Okay.
Oh, you can't.
I know. Okay. I know this is wishy-washy, but normally we would recommend straw. Because it's hard. The worst part about getting grass to come up from seed is just keeping the thing wet. And mm-hmm. unfortunately, when we have days like this where it's dry, hot, a lot of sun, you're going to be watering. You may be watering 7 or 8 times a day. You know, you just do a light sprinkling. You're just trying to keep it moist. You're not doing a thorough watering at this point. You're just doing a light sprinkling several times a day, trying to keep that top surface moist.
Okay.
And that gets hard to do it that often. So usually with straw, we'd use straw, but then you use it very thinly. You know, you can actually see the soil, you know, underneath the straw.
Right.
So it's very thin. Sometimes there's some issues with some of the straw actually reseeding itself. So he's absolutely right. But the one thing you'll find is those particular grasses, you know, usually it's wheat actually coming up. And those particular grasses are often ones that are killed very easily, either by constant mowing or just by using a pre-emergent control like crabgrass control. Usually we'll take care of those. So usually those are very short-term weed problem.
Okay.
So I don't know who you're going to say wins from that, but I think straw is just fine. So maybe your dad wins. I don't know.
Is there another material that might work just as well?
You know, they make
the weed problem.
Yeah, they certainly make products now that actually where the seed is actually impregnated into the product that actually is kind of a cellulose stuff. I guess you could get that kind of thing. It tends to be expensive on large areas. And plus, it already has the seed in it, and so you're kind of paying for one more thing. I'm not sure I've ever seen it sort of by itself for homeowners.
Okay.
But that might be something, a good search on the web, just to find that. Because usually that's something that has the seed in it, and they use it on, along highways and stuff when they're trying to get stuff to reseed.
Yeah, I've seen that before.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very
good
much.
Good luck.
Okay, thanks. So this is the kind of stuff, even around town I've seen in places where maybe they replace some sidewalk, and they're trying to get grass to grow again, and it looks like kind of like sawdust that's been dyed green.
Yeah, it's kind of a cellulose kind of stuff, and usually it's actually even sprayed on, so it's a very easy way to start a lawn, and then that stuff does keep it moist longer. So it's a great thing for areas where you're not going to be able to water, but it tends to be expensive for homeowners because generally you get it in a very small quantity. You know, you can just buy it in small quantities and small bags, and then it just gets more expensive. A lot, I would imagine that some of the lawn care companies maybe could arrange to have that done. You know, if somebody is, or a landscaper might be able to do that for you. But and at this point, I don't know if that's really available to homeowners on a large scale.
Okay. Let's see where we'll go next. El Paso, Illinois. Line one. Hello.
Yes. I got a question dealing with the blooming of a Minna lobata, which I went to the classes, the educational classes on the flowering vines, and I saw this, and it was just gorgeous on a mailbox. And I got an ugly mailbox, so I planted it, and the vines are just, just like it shows in the picture, just all over the place. And it looks very good. It's hid the messy mailbox, but I have no flowers. And I've fertilized it some, particularly at the beginning. But then it grew, and we got a couple of rains, which other people didn't get. But then it just kept going, and it's got ears all over the place, vines flying all over. But I don't get any, flying all over, but I... And it's in full sun, and I do not get any flowers.
I don't know why, because I was going to ask if it was in full sun. I don't know why it necessarily would not be blooming. It should be blooming by now, obviously. The one thing is, depending on how fertile the ground is, sometimes we can actually, the ground could be too fertile. And if there's a lot of nitrogen available to them, especially, a lot of times they'll put on lots and lots and lots of green growth, and then they don't put on a lot of flowers.
Now, this is along a county road.
Yeah, so you'd think there wouldn't be.
There was I did dig down and put in, just topsoil, but it shouldn't be that much.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised by that. It may be just a timing thing, and unfortunately, because I know we've had ours blooming at the Idea Garden, certainly by July and August.
Well, when it came August and it didn't bloom, I thought, well, next time I hear Sandy, I'm going to call her and find out.
Yeah, boy, other than just the fertility of the soil, I'm not sure what else. I'll do a little check-in, and maybe next month we can I can see if I can find out anything else about that particular plant.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. And let's go on again to someone in Urbana, line two, right here. Hello.
Yeah. Hi. I had a question and a problem. I'm sure you probably covered this before. I had some tomato plants that were growing great. They were just growing terrifically all year, and they were hit by that wilt, and then they all died. And I was wondering, is this connected to perhaps how early the plants are planted, and what can I do now to try to head it off next year? I'll listen on the radio. Thanks.
Okay. Well,
hold on.
Wait a minute. Don't go away.
Okay.
So it actually, did you get spots on the leaves at all before it died?
Yeah, it started down at the bottom.
You got spots on the leaves.
And worked up.
Right. And actually, probably what that is, if you get spots on the leaves, you're probably looking at the leaf disease problems. And we get a couple of them on tomatoes. And it usually starts at the bottom. You get these little spots, and then the leaves turn yellow, and then the leaves turn brown, and then it just works its way up the plant.
Yes,
and then eventually the whole thing looks horrible.
What is that? What is that disease?
Actually, it's either it's probably septoria. Sometimes it's called late blight, anthracnose. I mean, there's a whole bunch of leaf disease problems, unfortunately, on tomatoes. And you can use a fungicide, but you have to use it. Pardon?
I used one that I had used last year because I had a small amount of that happen. But this year it didn't have any effect at all.
Now, when did you start the fungicide? I mean, was the disease already going? Or
I started to see small spots. I started to see a leaf yellow down on the bottom. I had not had spots yet.
Yeah.
But I try to do it religiously and do them regularly.
Do you happen to know what you were using? Do you remember?
I don't have it. Off the top of my head, no, I don't.
Yeah, usually the copper fungicides are fairly effective on this. But the one thing, and I had a problem with this for a number of years, and I decided that one of my biggest problems was I plant the plants too close together and don't allow enough room in between plants. And I don't know if that's your situation here.
That could be.
Yeah, it always would start on the plant in kind of in the back next to the fence where there was poor air circulation. That's always where it would start. So I've just gotten better. Instead of planting, you know, the whole six in the cell pack or whatever, I give some of them away. I spread them out more. So just allow a lot of room in between plant and think about how big they're going to get.
They had pretty good circulation.
Yeah.
But does this disease, does it reside in the soil? How can I prepare for next year?
Yeah,
good
sanitation. It's a fungus, and it's going to overwinter on the diseased stuff, like the leaves and all that stuff. Unfortunately, this is a fungus that's all over the place, so it's kind of hard to do anything about it. But good air circulation, good sanitation this fall, getting rid of all that stuff. Get it out of there. Make sure there's no leaves and stuff. Trying to improve air circulation is going to help immensely. You can actually, sometimes you can at least slow it down, you know, as you see those lower leaves starting to look a little yellow. Get those out of there,
okay.
You know, because they certainly, as the water splashes up on them, they can infect the rest of the plant. Mulching sometimes helps. I don't know if you've kind of mulched, but sometimes that helps from the water splashing up on the leaves than splashing up further on the rest of the leaves, if that makes any sense. So some of those things may help to at least reduce it.
Can I put anything in the soil, too?
It's really not necessarily a soil problem, to be honest with you. It's really coming from usually the plant material. You know, the fungus is going to overwinter on old leaves and plants.
Okay. All right, well, thanks. I appreciate your help.
Right. Good luck.
All right, thanks. Aren't there now a number of varieties that are supposed to be resistant to these various wilts?
Yeah, well, that's why acid had spots on them, because tomatoes do get verticillium and fusarium. And those are certainly the two wilts, and we have really, and I would always plant verticillium and fusarium resistant tomato plants. And it'll say VF or VFN tell you that it's resistant, and that's always a good thing. But when the wilt ones die, you don't see spots first. It's just the leaves kind of yellow, or maybe one side of the plant yellows. You don't see those spots. And if you start to see the spots, then you know we're looking at more at a fungal leaf disease as opposed to this wilt one. Far as I know, I don't know of any of them that are particularly resistant to this leaf disease. There may be some that get it worse than others, but I've never seen that list.
Okay.
So.
All right. Well, let's go on here. We've got about 20 minutes left with Sandy. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Next is a Champagne caller, line one.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I have three questions for Sandy. The first is about spring bulbs. I bought some magic lily bulbs, and I got them in the mail from the catalog, and it has no directions on when to plant them or how deep.
Okay. They're really light, you know, these naked ladies or whatever you want to call them. You really want to plant them like you would any other kind of bulb. So you could certainly plant them now. Actually, plant them pretty much any time.
Okay.
But you want it probably for those guys, you're probably looking at about 4 inches deep.
Oh, no deeper than that.
Yeah, you really don't. And I'm talking about from the top of it,
right.
Probably 6 inches when you start to talk about the rest of it.
Will squirrels dig them up?
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever seen them bother those. They're actually poisonous, and I've never seen them bother those, to be honest with you.
Okay, and if I want to transplant some daffodils, this would be a good time to do that then, too.
Sure.
Okay.
You certainly can do that, too.
Okay, second question. I have a friend who has a fairly large hydrangea bush that she bought as white. I think it's fairly shaded, and it only blooms green.
Oh. You never see white flowers on it?
Not since the first year or two, apparently. And she asked me what to do, and I had no idea, and I looked things up and couldn't find anything.
Because usually what happens is as, you know, they come out and they look white, but then as they age, they turn green.
Oh.
So usually there's a time period there where they're actually white.
Okay.
And then they turn green later, and that's just, you know, part of what they do as they age.
Sunshine?
Pardon?
Could it be lack of sunshine?
You know, hydrangeas are pretty shade tolerant. Usually probably what you'd see is that they just plain old wouldn't bloom at all if they weren't getting enough sun. So I would really ask her if they're ever white.
Okay.
And this may be a particular one that just happens to get into that later stage faster than some of the other ones. So she may want to look at some other hydrangeas if that one just isn't acting like she wants it to.
Third and last question. I have an area about 4 feet by 10 feet that's on a slight slope in the parking area that I'd like to replace the grass with a ground cover.
Mm-hmm.
And is fall better or spring?
It's,
or does it depend on, I was thinking of creeping time for this particular area.
Mm-hmm. And it's 4 by 10?
Yeah.
Wow. Like that. That's kind of a big area for creeping time, be honest with you. Creeping time is one of those that doesn't spread as fast. It doesn't creep as fast as you might think.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to let you know.
Okay.
But as long as it's well-drained, it might be a good spot for it because it needs really good, well-drained soil.
Right. Okay.
How tall can this get? Do you care?
I want something that's really low.
Low as in?
As in four inches maximum.
Oh, so you really want something small.
Yeah, I want something.
Yeah. Hmm.
Trying to look like fake grass.
Look like fake grass.
You know, it's in the parking area near the street, and so I have some beds that are in that area, so I want the contrast.
Oh, okay. You know, I don't know if you like ajuga, the bugle weed. I don't know if you like
that. Yes, I do. I have that in some other areas.
Yeah, and actually does fairly well if you give it moisture in the full sun as well as in shade. And it makes a nice mat. And it doesn't get terribly tall except when it flowers. That might be one. Maybe you might like the size. There's certainly, you know, the traditional ones, English ivy and periwinkle. I don't know if you're crazy about those too much. I'm trying to think about some other ones that might spread better for you, and I'm having a hard time here.
Okay.
Maybe something will come to me.
There are apparently some creeping, low-growing junipers that I've seen listed.
I've never
seen pictures of them.
Sure. Actually, I guess I wasn't even thinking about anything other than perennials, but you're absolutely right there, and they probably would like that area.
Okay.
But there's creeping junipers. They're probably going to get a little bit taller than what you're talking about, but they're certainly fairly flat. They're still probably still looking at maybe a foot or so tall.
Okay.
You know, they're not going to be quite that.
Would this be a good time to do it, or should I wait till spring?
You certainly could do it now.
Okay.
I wouldn't wait much later, probably. I'd do it by the 1st of October or so. I don't think I'd wait too much longer than that.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. Good luck.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And let's see. The next caller in line is someone in Urbana. Line number 3. Hello.
Hi, Sandy.
Hi.
I have a potted hibiscus that I've had for 8 years. I take it outside every summer, and I've had to cut it back considerably over the years because it gets gigantic.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually tired of bringing it into the house. But I'm just one of those people that can't bear to kill it off. So the question is, I see lots of hibiscus outdoors all winter long planted in the ground. If this has been in and out of the house all of its life with me, could it possibly survive outdoors for the winter if I decided not to take it in?
Yeah, the confusing thing about hibiscus is there's several different types of plants called hibiscus.
Mm-hmm.
And I would imagine, does yours have kind of a shiny leaf?
Yes.
Yeah, you're looking at the tropical hibiscus, and it won't make it through the winter outside. You know, that's a Florida plant.
Oh, this is do or die.
Yeah, this one either. Yeah, I'm sorry, but
maybe
you can, like, you know, find a foster parent or something for the winter, maybe. I don't know. But there are other hibiscus, you know, they're actually perennial plants, and those will live over. And there's actually the shrub that's called a hibiscus. So those are the ones that you're seeing.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
bye.
Very good. Another Urbana person here. The next is on line number 2.
Is that me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I've got a couple of bulb questions. One is, how do you tell up from down on a hardy hydrangea? And the other one is, how do you overwinter a elephant leaf, elephant ear bulb?
Okay. The elephant ear bulb, all you need to do is, you know, before it really gets hit hard with a frost, you really just dig it up, and it'll, depending on how long you've had it, it's this giant bulb. And then I would just put it, hopefully you've got someplace where it's fairly cool, and I just, you know, put it in a paper bag. I wouldn't put it in anything plastic and just, you know, store it in a cool place. It'd be nice if it was about 55 degrees, 60 degrees, something along those lines, but you just don't want to store it where it's going to either freeze or get too hot.
Okay.
And then the first question was that a hardy hydrangea? I didn't hear the whole question.
Yeah. No, hardy cyclamen.
Oh, a hardy cyclamen. And then you want to, I'm sorry?
I bought some, and they look like brown flying, you know, unidentified flying objects.
Oh, okay.
Same on both the top and the bottom, and I didn't know which way was up.
Oh, okay, okay. And actually, you will never know.
Well,
those things, they look like rocks to me. Yeah, they're very odd, and they look like rocks, and there really isn't too much that you can tell, to be honest with you.
Well, now, I plant them sideways?
And that's usually what people do, is just plant them sideways, and the plant will figure it out.
Okay.
And I don't know if they told you to soak those. Sometimes they actually tell you to go ahead and soak those in warm water first and then plant them.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yeah, good luck.
All right, thanks for the call. We have about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. Sandy Mason is our guest. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She is here on the program once a month to help with problems in the home landscape, generally on a Tuesday. Would be her regular time to be here next Tuesday, but we're going to be preempted by the Supreme Court hearings, and we asked if she could come in a little early, and she said sure. So same thing as usual here, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. We got one person here waiting to go, and let's talk with him. Clinton, Illinois, the caller, line 4, toll-free line. Hello.
Hello there.
Yeah.
We planted a new lawn in the spring at a new house. We've got our grass up, but we have a lot of either crabgrass, barnyard grass that came from the straw, and I've got big
just
clumps.
Talk about that.
Now, my husband said he's going to slip seed in the fall, but I'm wondering, should this be treated to kill these big, you know, it's like all comes out of one root and it just spreads. I don't know if that's crabgrass or you thought maybe barnyard grass, something came out of the straw.
Well, does it actually stand upright or is it flat?
Well, it's sort of flat, and then if you let the grass grow too high, then it's got seeds on the top. But, I mean, it really fans out. I mean, it can fan out 8.
Oh, you're probably looking at crabgrass.
Yeah.
You're probably looking at crabgrass from that, which would be typical. We'd expect crabgrass in a new lawn. And normally what we do with that is, you know, you certainly could go ahead and overseed. You know, this time of year, actually, this would be a really good time to overseed if you want to thicken it up. And then next season, usually around the first couple weeks or so of April, I'd think about putting down a pre-emergent control for the crabgrass. It's an annual, comes back every year from seed, and so those pre-emergent controls are fairly effective on keeping those seeds from coming up for you.
Okay, so we don't need to do anything in the fall other than seed.
Yeah, if it's crabgrass, it's an annual. It's already done its thing for the most part, and so I just wait till next spring and deal with it through the pre-emergent herbicides.
Oh, okay, fine. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Next is Muhammad, line number 4. Hello.
Hi.
Not number 1, sorry.
That's okay. Hi, I have a question regarding a houseplant that has been summering outside, and it's a very large jade plant, and it's probably 25 years old.
Wow.
And it's huge. I mean, my husband gets a hernia bringing it in and out every year. But my question is, it's getting lopsided. Is it all right for me to trim a large branch off of it, or would that damage the plant?
Sure. And actually, I have trimmed those back really heavy, and your husband will probably be really glad to hear that. You can actually trim them back fairly severely, and they're really kind of amazing plants in that even with a very large, branch, maybe a couple inches across, they will resprout from those very easily.
And should I do anything with the cutting implements? Should I put, bleach on it or anything so it wouldn't cause any kind of contamination to the plant?
Well, it's not a bad idea, just to use a 10% bleach solution on your pruning tools. That's probably always a good idea. It's not a typical thing we'd see in jade plant, but when you have a big cut surface, it's probably a good idea to do that. And then the part that you cut off, your husband's going to love this, you could start another plant.
And how would I do that?
Actually, what I have done, even with large branches, I just stick the whole large branch into a pot of soil.
All right.
They're really, jade plants are like the plant for people that really, you know.
Yeah, have difficulty with house plants.
They're tough plants. Other than overwatering, they survive a lot of stuff.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Sure.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Bye-bye.
Champagne next, this line number two. Hello.
Oh, hello.
Mm-hmm.
I have New England asters, and they just topple over. They grow mm-hmm. so tall, mm-hmm. they can't carry their mm-hmm. weight. And I've cut them down a couple of times. I don't know what. How often do you have to do that?
When are you cutting them down?
Well,
what time of year?
I don't remember. But I guess it was a while ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
When's the best time to cut them down?
Yeah. When they get to be about 6 inches tall or so, I chop their heads off. You know, take off about 2 inches or so. Just chop their heads off.
And then what if they keep growing?
Well, then they do keep growing, but they should branch from there. And so the idea is that they branch out more and don't get as tall. I do it fairly early.
6 inches tall.
Yeah, or thereabouts.
That's not very tall.
No, I mean, you really want to do it early. That's what I'm saying. You do it early, you know, like in June or so. You're trimming them back, and you can trim them back fairly hard. And at that point, they'll start to branch. And that way, they branch low as opposed to branching high. Because if you trim them high, then they're just going to branch high, and then you get the same problem. They just topple over.
Okay.
So do it earlier.
Well, thank
mm-hmm.
you.
Sure.
The second question is, I keep forgetting, I have a kind of roses that bloom several times.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And when's the best time to trim those?
You know, that's really up to you. If they're blooming several times, and they're actually blooming on new wood, as in the wood that's produced that year.
Uh-huh.
So for those, we don't worry quite so much about when we do it. To do severe pruning, I'd probably wait till spring. I mean, if you're really going to cut them back hard, I'd probably wait till April. But
before they start.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I would do a real hard pruning at that time.
Okay. Thank you very
mm-hmm.
much.
All right. Thank you. Let's go to Shanoa for another caller right here, line four. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Sandy, I don't know if you've ever had this question, but a lot of the prairie grasses that we like, we're seeing in our road ditches and stuff, are heading out with seed. And I was wondering about clipping some of those seed heads and saving them to plant either next year, or would I be able to, you know, put them in pots or just sow them in the spring or fall, and would they take off next year? Because the blue stem and the big and little blue stem it's right now, they're seeding out.
Mm-hmm. And you're right. And last time I checked, they were just kind of flowering. You just have to wait, you know, just check them and make sure that they have already produced seed. You know, and you can tell it's got something to it. There's something there. You know, you can kind of feel a little hard seed. And normally you just strip them off. And I would just keep them over the wintertime. I'd probably go ahead and put them in my refrigerator. Just keep them in the refrigerator for the winter and then plant them out next spring. And you could either put them in pots or plant them out in the garden or however you want to do it. But that works out fairly well. But they do need a cold period in order to get through.
And another question on that, is there any best way to start them I mean, it seems like we leave them go in our ditches and stuff, and they come through real, real well if mm-hmm. you don't mow them and things. But in my yard and that, I've had more of a difficult time getting them started for specimen plantings, and it's really nice when they spread because you don't have to mow them.
Right, right. So you've started it from seed before and had a hard time, or you're starting from plants before and had a hard time?
It seems like it takes a couple of years. Actually, I have better luck with taking them, digging up the roots and doing it that way.
Yeah, which is probably true for a lot of plants because they've already produced roots. And what I've noticed with prairie plants is, you know, those first couple of years is they spend a lot of time, a lot of energy putting down roots. The top part of the plant, you think nothing is going on and this plant's not doing anything. And then after about the third year, then they take off. It's like
thank you very much.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Good luck.
Okay, thank you. And someone in Chicago here on our line number four, or number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Good morning.
Well, you bring an aloe vera plant home from the supermarket, and the spears, I guess you would call it, they're sort of vertical, but some of them start lying down, and then mm-hmm. they get a kink in them. Is that too much water, or?
They get a kink in them?
Yeah,
I'm trying
the
to
kink
imagine.
Is underneath. They don't seem rigid any longer.
Well, if they don't, I would. It almost sounds like they're getting overwatered. because they might be getting a rot. Is that a possibility?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, aloe vera is definitely one of those that needs to dry out.
Really dry out, like you could go 2 weeks or so without
water?
Well,
probably. I mean, they're pretty tough plants, and they'd probably rather be on the dry side than on the wet side.
All right, then. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We are just about the point where we've used the time. Are there some events that you'd like to mention?
We have a couple programs actually tonight at 7 o'clock, although that's the same time as Illinois Gardener. Maybe I shouldn't mention this. But at any rate, it's invasive plants, and this is actually a Telenet program that's going to be held at our office at the Champaign County Extension Office, or actually extension offices throughout the state. So you may want to check on that. And then this Saturday, I'm doing a talk on weeds, weed them and reap, at 11 o'clock at the Idea Garden this Saturday. And then we have some more Telenets coming up on September 20th and 22nd on fruit trees. So check your local extension office. A lot of the offices will offer these Telenets, and it's something that we do as a group, and so everybody, it gets done live, but through all the different offices. So it's a great opportunity to hear about a wide variety of things.
Weed 'em and reap.
You like that one, don't you?
Yeah. Well, I remember that. You laid that one out last time. And I thought, yeah, weed 'em and reap. And I think you admitted you stole it from someplace.
I did, from Victory Garden.
Yeah. Oh, okay. All right.
Which I guess is okay.
And so now we talked about the fall fertilization thing, and somebody asked about bulbs. So if people want to plant spring flowering bulbs, now is fine time to do that?
Yeah, usually we're probably at this stage where I would be thinking about, you know, ordering them. Because usually the best time is probably more the end of September, 1st of October is probably when we're getting into a little better time. But this would be the time to start planning, ordering, so you have plenty of time to get them.
All right. Sandy Mason, she's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's with us every month, usually on a Tuesday, and we'll be back again in October. Mm-hmm. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And also, of course, people are interested in gardening. There is this program we have called Illinois Gardener. It's on Thursday nights at 7 o'clock, WILL-TV, and there's always a different sort of rotating panel of experts there, and there is the possibility, like with the show, to call in with questions. And it's a very popular program, so if you're interested in gardening, you want to check that out. Thank you very much. Programs here on AM 580 made possible by a grant from Christopher's Fine Jewelry Design, a gallery of imaginative jewelry and gifts in downtown Champaign, offering one-of-a-kind custom design, gemstone roundtables, and conflict-free diamonds direct from Canada. That's about it for us here this morning. I hope you can join us tomorrow. We will, I think probably tomorrow again, we'll be having some programs from the Focus 580 archives for you. Next week, I believe on Monday, we'll be doing a live show on Monday morning, the first hour, and then a lot of the rest of the week. Next week, we expect we will be preempted by the coverage from National Public Radio of the hearings for Judge John Roberts to be the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. So you can look ahead to that next week. Of course, right now, we want you to stay tuned because there's much more in the way of news and features and sports and other things coming up as part of the Afternoon Magazine. The show starts now. The host, Celeste Quinn.
Thank you, David. Good morning. Coming up this afternoon in the 1 o'clock hour of the Afternoon Magazine, we'll feature an interview that Todd Gleason did with economist Ken Meador. Meador's interests include the farm and food economy, and he's also involved with Farm Aid. 20 years ago, the first Farm Aid concert was held in Champaign to raise awareness about the pressures facing family farmers and to raise money to help people keep their farms. That interview with Ken Meador that Todd conducted yesterday, we will do that this afternoon following the 1 o'clock news. Let's take a look now at prices from the Chicago Board of Trade. September wheat is trading at 307 and a quarter, up 3 and 3 quarters. December, 324, up 5 and a